I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm at Jordan Hall with Christophe Coin, the cellist, and Eric Hobart, the violinist from Quatuor Mosaic. And it's so good to have you in Boston. I'm appreciative of the time to have a little conversation, especially about Mozart and about Haydn, but also about the group itself. So Eric, are you one of the original members of the group, and is the entire group all the original formation of the group?
Yes, we are together since 30 years. We met each other in Concertus Musicus and even before, and we had decided on one tour of Concertus Musicus, we decided to try to play quartet with the gut strings and these instruments, and we found it very good, and we said why not try it. And then this time there were many few quartets, not many quartets that played on this kind of original instruments, so we started this, and it turned out to be our first recording was a Haydn 77. We started immediately with a very big cycle of works, and it was a success. And then from then we could go on, and we stayed together all the time in the same four people.
That's a fantastic long run for any group. And Christophe, I wonder, anytime we hear Concertus Musicus, we think of Nicholas Arnicor, and I wonder how much his musicianship had to do with the way that the group plays together.
Actually, we never played for him. We never had a lesson as a quartet with him. But of course, he is our père spirituel. So I think a lot of his ideas about music and about phrasing, articulation, and the way of speaking, we try to take over in our playing.
And Eric, when it comes to the sound that the group makes, what would a listener hear differently from a group that's playing on instruments with a more modern setup?
Yeah, I think it was just normal to play on gut strings until about 1930. So until then, people thought it's much more beautiful to play on gut string, and it's true, because the gut strings have more overtones, they have more colors, and it's also easier to get a blend in the quartet when there is not a steel E string up for the first violin. So, but I must say, it also needs a hall that is good for this kind of setting, that you can really hear the difference. You know, in a good hall, I think that such a quartet really has a different sound, and when the people really listen, they would find out that is a very colorful and interesting sound. But in some halls, I must say, when it's very big, the hall is very big, for instance, it might not be such a big difference. And also, I must say, the way of playing is still much more important than the kind of instruments.
And describe a little bit about that way of playing. What are some of the details in the way that you phrase or articulate phrases that would distinguish the sound that you're going for?
Classical music needs a very clear articulation, a speaking way, and for instance, you should never play a lot of sostenuto and continuous vibrato in the same way. That is one important thing, that the vibrato must have very many possibilities. Of course, it's nonsense to say there was no vibrato. It's really not true. But the vibrato should not be one kind of sauce that is put over everything. And that is an important thing for us. And for instance, the tone production, it's important to have a clear beginning of the note and then go a little bit away. Because when you stay on the notes too much, the whole thing becomes very thick and soupy, and this is against the way the composers wanted it to sound, I think.
Christophe, hearing your rehearsal, it was really kind of remarkable how the group would highlight certain voices in certain phrases and then move and highlight other voices. Is the group mainly focused in the classical repertoire, or what is the latest music that this ensemble performs?
We started with Haydn, as Eric said. It was our everyday bread, and it's normal, I think, for a quartet to start with Haydn, because he's the father and inventor of the quartet, and everything comes from there. But then we worked on Mozart, who has a much more complex texture, and Beethoven, late Beethoven, and then we went progressively to the Romantics, took over Mendelssohn, Schumann, Brahms. We play all these quartets, And recently we decided to go a little bit further still with Debussy and Bartok first and second quartet. That's our limit, I think, because I think then the gut string really, there is no sense to play Shostakovich with gut strings. It wouldn't bring, I think, as much as in the classical.
And that's about the point that you mentioned, Eric, that people started to use a more modern setup anyway, so it might go through Debussy, Bartok. Christoph, when it comes to choosing specific repertoire for programs, in this one, you're ending with a Haydn quartet preceded by two of the quartets Mozart dedicated to Haydn. So what do you hear in the Mozart quartets that you feel like he learned from Haydn?
I think this Opus 20 from Haydn was a big shock for Mozart, and it gave him probably the spring to get over and write for string quartets. I don't know exactly what in which detail you can transpose one of each other, but you feel, for example, in the D minor we play, which is composed the more or less the day where his son was born. In the last movement, particularly, there it's for me it's like a message over the baby bed. You know, every character of the family will come and make a salutation and a wish for the baby. It's for me, I have this very clear picture, and I think this sort of thing he took over from Haydn, because Haydn was also very much writing music for the daily life and was influenced by folk musician in Esterházy and also. So it's at that time it's contemporary music, I mean, but not for elite, but really for every class of the society. And I think that you can hear also with Mozart.
Eric, the Haydn quartet on the program is one of the slightly earlier ones, and yet at the same time, irrespective of that particular piece, what do you feel like Haydn may have learned from Mozart when he looked at these six quartets that Mozart had written for him?
Yeah, it's difficult to say, because they were good friends and they estimated them very high, one the other. But this is also difficult to say, because you can never say that Haydn became somehow similar to Mozart. He was very much his own man, and he developed his own thing. And Mozart in a way also. So I think even Mozart was more influenced by Haydn, because, as Christoph said, Haydn is really the father of the string quartet. And Mozart wrote quartets before that, with normal fugues, for instance, at the end. But after, when he wrote the six quartets for Haydn, he wrote a new way of the fugues combined with the sonata form, like the last movement of the G major quartet, the first in the cycle. So he wanted to go on somehow, progress with the way of composing this music. And what Haydn learned from Mozart, I can only guess that maybe he was, for instance, the sound quality Mozart gets of the quartet. This it's kind of a sweetness, but not sugar, not like sugar. It's just. And I think in some of the later quartets of Haydn, in some slow movements, you can feel a little bit of this sensuality of Mozart. And so this is one of the points where Haydn was fascinated by Mozart.
I really like that you said that, because now when I'm thinking about the Opus 20 number 2, the quartet by Haydn that is on this program, it doesn't really have that sweet quality that you're describing, I don't think. It's a little bit more, to my ears, maybe a wooden quality, a very textured, beautiful wooden quality. I don't know if that makes sense in your impressions as well, but what do you feel like the Opus 20 number 2 is that sets it apart from other Haydn quartets?
I think what he does in this quartet is totally new and quite a revolution, because the Capriccio, the second movement, is unique, because it, on one hand, it looks back in Baroque textures. It has a opera-like quality, recitativo, and it also looks in the future with its freedom, and then the combination of the movement also is very unique. So I think in this cycle of Opus 20, Haydn tried out all possibilities, like a lexicon, you know, like he looked in every way what would be possible, and this became a group of quartets that is just a magic, and I think for many quartets it's a most important cycle of Haydn quartets, despite many of the later are also very famous and fantastic. But Opus 20 is a breakthrough. It's a real change.
Well, and that's actually, that was maybe the one thing that surprised me about the program. Looking at the two Mozart quartets, maybe on paper one would have expected a later Haydn quartet after the Mozart quartets. But I see what you're saying now, that the Opus 20 was a big breakthrough, something that had never happened before. So, Christoph, is there a way that your work within the quartet plays a role in the outside projects you do, the other projects you do? How do those relate? How do you find your work in the quartet affecting your other projects that you do throughout your musical life?
Actually, the name of Mosaic was chosen for a chamber orchestra because we were the principal members of this orchestra without conductor, based in Paris. And when it disappeared, we kept the quartet. Of course, we thought it was very important to be the nucleus of the orchestra and to work a little bit more deeper with the quartet, but also to help the orchestra work. I don't know how it influenced of our personal other things to other activities, but of course we are a quartet, and even if we don't rehearse every day like most of the normal quartet, we are a sort of period-wise quartet, and I think the philosophy we have with the quartet is also this, more or less the same with the other activities. Yeah.
Christoph Quinn, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Pleasure.
And Eric Hobart, thank you as well for a few minutes of your time.
Thank you.